Welcome to the Movement Church Podcast. Our vision is to be a movement of people finding their way back to God. For more information about Movement Church, including attending a worship experience, getting connected, or to give online, please visit movementcolumbus.com.
Learning to walk is a hard thing to do, especially when you're a kid and you've never done it before, right? As you practice walking, you learn about yourself and how your body works. You know, like what it means to take your first step and what it takes for you to keep on going, and actually what it takes for you to fall. And there's a lot of falling at first when you learn to walk, right? When you're a kid, there's no fear, right? There's no really like knowing that when you fall, you might hit your head or anything like that, but you just keep wanting to try when you walk. And I don't know if it's because when you're a kid, you have diapers, or because we just don't know any better, but I thank God for diapers. You know, it's cushion for the whooping. You know, when you get spanked, you know, it's extra cushion, right? Or sometimes when you go number two in your diaper, it's extra cushion when you fall or whatnot. I don't know how graphic I should get, but diapers are good for their dual purpose, right? But as you learn to walk, you depend on your parents, you depend on other people, you depend on toys that you might be pushing around just to, you know, stay stable with. But there's just this natural instinct for when you grow up to learn how to walk. But once you learn how to walk, you don't necessarily need to depend on other people. You become free. You understand that you can go where you want to go, when you want to go. You have control over how far you want to walk and how strong, and you have freedom, right? And you just have a sense of independence. You have a sense of freedom to roam around and explore and grow and obtain a new perspective of your world and realize that there's a kitchen to your house with all the pots and pans that you have to play with and make your mom work a lot harder to follow you around. But how is it when we talk about learning to walk with Jesus that we aren't always eager to take the first step when walking with Jesus? And not just taking the first step, but keeping up the pace when we walk. We are always ready to explore, learn, grow in a relationship with Jesus. And there seems to be something that holds us back. The desire to walk on our own or with someone else seems much easier than walking with Jesus, especially since we can't tangibly see him or touch him or smell him or anything like that. Like, I get it. We're asking you to walk with somebody who died 2,000 years ago and ascended back into heaven who is not here. And yet we even struggle as human beings. We struggle in our own relationships, yet we're asking you to learn how to walk with Jesus who's not even physically here with us. I get it. But maybe it's beyond that point. Maybe it's because you have become too independent. Maybe you just like your own schedule. You like doing your own thing and you don't want to include other people. Or maybe you've just been burned by the church. Or maybe you feel like Jesus doesn't hear you when you talk with him, when you try to walk with him. Or maybe it's just because you've been hurt time and time again by people and you just don't trust anyone anymore. So why trust Jesus? Especially when things keep going wrong, why rely on him? Or maybe you just feel like you aren't good enough to walk with Jesus. And like Sarah said last week, Jesus has invited us to walk on a journey with him. And today what I want to talk about is why that journey is so important and why it's so worth it to walk with Jesus. And one of the reasons why this week we're going to talk about is that we can walk with Jesus because he is willing to feel what we feel. And that's our big idea today. I can walk with Jesus because he is willing to feel what I feel. So if you would turn to your Bibles to John 11, 1 through 44, we're in the NLT version. If you don't have a Bible, there's one underneath your seat, and it's on page 820 if you don't know where John is, 820. And instead of talking about a story about myself or a story that can relate to this story that we're about to read, I just want us to read this story of the Bible for what it is. And we're just going to experience life together as we read through this story, as if this is something that we can apply to our lives right here, right now. And this is a really long passage, and I know you're thinking, oh man, are we going to read all 44 of these verses? Yes, we are. And so as we go along, I'm going to stop and we're going to talk through it, and we're just kind of learn how to study the Bible together and learn how to apply this story to our lives. And what does it mean for us when we know that Jesus chose to feel what we feel? So let me pray and then we'll get started. God, I just thank you for this morning. I thank you for being here at a place where we can just worship you and gather you and gather together in your name, God. I just pray that you would speak through me. I just pray that you would open up everybody's hearts, Lord, to just feelings, God, and to be okay with those, and to know that you have come and you've sent your son to be able to experience what we have experienced, God, here on earth. So I pray that we would walk away knowing what that means for us, God, and how that can motivate us and affirm us that walking with you is the best journey we could ever go on, Lord. So I pray and thank you so much for loving us first. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. So this is a long and powerful story, but it's one that we're just really going to be able to just immerse ourselves in and explore. It's going to be awesome. I love this story. I've enjoyed studying it. So let's pick up in verses. Let's read the first six verses here. In verse 1, John 11, 1. Here we go. A man named Lazarus was sick. He lived in Bethany with his sisters, Mary and Martha. This is the Mary who later poured the expensive perfume on the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was sick. So the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, "Lord, your dear friend is very sick." But when Jesus heard about it, he said, "Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this." So although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. So we'll stop there for a second. I just want to give you a quick overview of Lazarus. From what we can see here in these first six verses, Lazarus was the brother of Mary. He lived in Bethany, and he was sick. And if we look at if we get all technical and we look at the Greek verb for sick, it's asthenio, and that means that he was basically without strength. And that's really all that we know. We don't know what kind of sickness he had, but we knew that he didn't have any strength, and we knew that it was serious because he was going to die. And what's really cool is that through Mary and Martha's request, or through their letter to him, they didn't actually request anything, like for any specific thing for him to do, but they just asked, "Hey, Lazarus is sick. What are you going to do? Are you going to come?" They just assumed that their relationship was so tight that telling him that he was sick, he was just going to stop everything that he was going to do and come. So there was a suggested love that Jesus and Lazarus had for each other, and it was a love of friendship in brotherhood. So you're probably thinking, like, if their love was so close to each other and they were like brothers and they're really good friends, why would Jesus say in verse 6 that he was just going to stay there for the next 2 days? Like, your best friend's sick, wouldn't you want to go see him and help him? That doesn't sound like somebody that I would learn to walk with. You know, like, "Here, let me take your hand and let me help you walk, and then I'm just going to step away and just let you fall. Like, I'm just not going to help you. I'm not going to be there for you." And I know that, like, we've probably all had those people that haven't been there for us when we need them. And so this doesn't really affirm to us, like, oh, yeah, Jesus is the person to walk with because he'll be there for you. It's not really encouraging. But I don't want to get you guys too worked up about that right now because there's a lot more to the story. So we're gonna learn why Jesus waited. So let's pick up back in verse 7. We're just going to keep going on here. "Finally, he said to his disciples, 'Let's go back to Judea.' But his disciples objected. 'Rabbi,' they said, 'only a few days ago, people in Judea were trying to stone you. Are you going there again?' Jesus replied, 'There are 12 hours of daylight during the day. During the day, people walk safely. They can see because they have the light of this world. But at night, there is danger of stumbling because they have no light.' Then he said, 'Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I will go and wake him up.' The disciples said, 'Lord, if he is sleeping, he will soon get better.' They thought Jesus literally meant Lazarus was sleeping. But Jesus meant Lazarus had died. So he told them plainly, 'Lazarus is dead. And for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there, for now you will really believe me. Come, let's go see him.' Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, 'Let's go to and die with Jesus.'" So there's a lot in this passage, but I just want you to focus on a few things. For one, for face value, Lazarus is dead at this point. He's died, and contextually, within the first 3 days, they wrap him up and they put him in his tomb, in his burial grounds, wherever he might be buried at, and then they just start mourning for like the next week. And then they invite people days 3 and 4 from all over to come mourn with them. And in the chapter before, Jesus had to flee Judea from where Lazarus was because Jews were threatening them, threatening Jesus to throw stones at him because he was claiming to be Son of God. So there was a huge risk of going back to be with Lazarus. But Jesus ignored that risk. And even his disciples are like, no, don't go. This is not a good time. You know, you already wanted to wait for 2 days. Why do you want to go now when there's still a big risk? And obviously, Jesus probably could have helped from a distance because he's the Son of God, but he had a different plan. He wanted to show them something. And I think it's interesting when we look in verse 15, he says, come, let's go see him, as if he's not even dead, as if he's alive. It's kind of interesting. I wouldn't really say if I'm going to a funeral, oh, come on, let's go see him, you know, like, because they're dead. That's not really something that I would think about in that way. And lastly, from that passage, Jesus reminds his disciples that he is in control. And it's just such a crazy and bold statement just for him to say, for your sakes, I'm glad that I wasn't there, because now you truly are going to believe in me. Why? So that their faith would be strengthened in the end. They were going to see something spectacular happen because he came after the fact. So here's when the story gets good. We're going to pick up in verse 17, and we're going to see that by the time Jesus gets there, he's already been dead for 4 days. So that's a pretty long time when you're being dead. You know, 4 days in, you're still dead. You know, you can't get any more dead than being dead for 4 days, right, I guess. So he's in a bad state. 4 days later, he's still dead. And he meets Martha. Martha is the first one that comes to him. Now, Martha and Mary have very different personalities. Martha is more of the doer and the go-getter around the house and whatnot. And so she's trying to fix everything and make sure everyone's doing well and whatnot. And she meets Jesus, and she is disappointed. She's like, Jesus, if you could have just been here, you could have saved Lazarus. Why? So let's read on verse 17 and see this dialogue here. When Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days. Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem, and many of the people had come to console Martha and Mary in their loss. When Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had only been here, my brother would have not died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask. Now, what we're going to be talking about later is that we all respond to grief in different ways. And as we can see here, Martha responded with disappointment and wished that Jesus could have come sooner to save Lazarus. But out of that disappointment, she responded poorly and sarcastically and kind of took a jab at Jesus. Because if we look at this passage in verse 22 contextually, she basically said, oh, but by the way, I know that if you just ask God, you know, he'll give you whatever he wants. And contextually, she was meaning that, oh, God is your superior, you're inferior to him, he'll just grant you whatever you want, as if they weren't equal. But in reality and contextually, like, Jesus and God are equal. They're on the same level of playing field. But because she was so emotional and disappointed, she lashed out at Jesus and kind of made a sarcastic comment. But as we read on in verse 23, we're going to see how Jesus responded with truth, with grace and understanding, and chose to ignore the statement. So let's pick up in verse 23. We're just going to keep going. We're going through fast. I know this is a lot, but we'll land the plane here in a second. Verse 23, it says, Jesus told her, your brother will rise again. Yes, Martha said, he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day. Jesus told her, I am the resurrection and the life, and anyone who believes in me will live, even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this, Martha? Yes, Lord, she told him. I've always believed that you are Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world. Then she returned to Mary. She called Mary aside from the mourners and told her, the teacher is here and wants to see you. So Mary immediately went to him. So this is kind of like round two of this bout and this dialogue with Martha and Jesus, because she misunderstands, because of the state that she's in, she misunderstands what Jesus is really trying to communicate to her. because she thought that Jesus was basically saying, yes, I'm the resurrection and the life. She was thinking, oh yeah, one day when you return again, of course Lazarus is going to raise from the dead. But what Jesus was trying to communicate is that I am the resurrection and the life, like right now. Like in your presence, right in front of you, I am the resurrection and I am the life. And I love how in this moment, what Jesus is really doing is just sharing the gospel with her in her grief. And not only that, but she's sharing the gospel with someone who already knows the gospel, who already knows the truth, but she just needed to be reminded of it. And I think in those moments when we are hurting, we need to be reminded of the gospel and of the truth. Jesus isn't something that's going to happen to me one day. It is here right now. And that's what Jesus was trying to communicate to her. But the point is that Jesus didn't want to rebuke her for her irrational beliefs and responses because of the state that she was in, but he sought to help her grow in her faith. Romans 1:17 says that it's through faith that a righteous person has life. So when we see how Jesus responds to Martha, it is important as we contrast the view to how Jesus responds when he talks with Mary. So let's continue in the story here in verse 30. Jesus had stayed outside the village at the place where Martha met him. When the people who were at the house consoling Mary saw her leave so hastily, they assumed she was going to Lazarus' grave to weep. And I think it's important just to stop here real quick that if they assumed that she was going to Lazarus' grave to weep, that they had already seen her weeping and crying and isolating herself away from the pack. So she's already responding differently than Martha. So as we continue to read, here we go. So they followed her there. When Mary arrived and they saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had only been here, my brother would have not died. When Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up within him. And he was deeply troubled. Where have you put him? He asked. They told him, Lord, come and see. Then Jesus wept. The people who were standing nearby said, see how much he loved him? But some said, this man has healed the blind. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying? So we know that Martha responded with disappointment, but Mary, as we see, responded with discouragement. And with that discouragement, she was very emotional and crying a lot. And then the result was something that we don't expect. Jesus cried. He began to cry. He began to show emotion. And this is like the part of the story, and like when you're watching a movie where, like after an intense scene or intense buildup of a movie, that it all becomes into slow motion and then something happens that you could least expect. Like Jesus, Son of God, who's in control of everything, starts to cry. So why was Jesus crying? An even better question, why was Jesus crying when he knew that he could save him? Because even many were around him were confused because of Jesus' tears. They even asked and questioned, you know, see how much he loved him. This man healed the blind. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying? And they probably were thinking, too, if Jesus really loved Lazarus, why did he not do something earlier? Most people thought that in this instant, Jesus was late. He arrived too late. But what we're going to see is that Jesus is never late, and he has a perfect plan. Because everyone around him misunderstood the meaning of his tears. Jesus was crying because of a number of different things. First, he was crying because of the deep hurt and sorrow that he saw in Mary and other people around. He was crying out of showing compassion. Jesus also cried because he was angry and troubled. Because the callousness of the Jews, because when he was about to leave for Judea, the disciples questioned him. And question his power and question his plan. He was crying out of the unbelief of the Jews present, questioning, you know, if he can heal the blind, why couldn't he have saved Lazarus? And then lastly, apart from all those things, he was crying because he was just sad. He loved Lazarus, and his good dear friend was dead. Jesus felt for the people that he cared about, and he cared about their salvation, but he also empathized with them with where they were at. For Jesus said that it would not end in death, but for the purpose that the Son of God will receive glory from this. So let's read these last seven verses and see what that means. How is God going to receive glory from this? In verse 38 it says, Jesus will still Jesus was still angry as he arrived at the tomb. A cave with a stone rolled across its entrance. "Roll the stone aside," Jesus told him. But Mary, the dead man's sister, protested, "Lord, he has been dead for 4 days. The smell will be terrible." Jesus responded, "Didn't I tell you that you would see God's glory if you believe?" So they rolled the stone aside. Then Jesus looked up to heaven and said, "Father, thank you for hearing me. You always hear me, but I said it out loud for the sake of all these people standing here, so that they would believe you sent me." Then Jesus shouted, "Lazarus, come out." And the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound in grave clothes, his face wrapped in headcloth. Jesus told them, "Unwrap him and let him go." So at this point, Jesus is alive and everyone is celebrating. Like, this is an amazing thing that they just witnessed. Jesus rose Lazarus from the dead after 4 days. It's like one of the most magnificent miracles, and personally in my life, like looking at all the miracles that he did to raise someone from the dead after 4 days. But in the midst of all their celebration, in the midst of all their just roller coaster of emotions, you know, one minute he's dead, next minute he's not, because Jesus is here and he just did something miraculous. There's something in these last seven verses that I missed myself when I first read them. Because Martha, she was still reacting out of her emotions when Jesus asked her to roll that stone away. And she forgot the words that Jesus said to her earlier when he said that I am the resurrection and the life. Not my second coming, but right now. Her emotions got in the way of her being obedient to God. And she gave excuses. So he's dead for 4 days already, and he's probably going to smell like an old dead person for 4 days. I don't know what that smells like, but probably really bad and stuck in a hot tomb with the stone covered. It probably wasn't going to smell great, and she wasn't prepared for that. She was like done with that. But she let her emotions get in the way of what Jesus was asking her to do. And this was a moment for Jesus to teach Martha and everyone around something. This is one of the things that like hits home with me. Because I think when we walk with Jesus, this is one of the most important things that we can remember. That in order for Jesus to do what he could only do, aka raise Lazarus from the dead, like no one else could do that, Jesus asked Martha to do only what she was capable of doing. In order for Jesus to do what he could only do, Martha had to do what she could only do. Move the stone out of the way. Let God do his thing, but you got to move that stone out of the way. But again, because Martha, in the emotional state that she was in, she reacted out of character and with little faith. So let's just recap the story real quick. Lazarus was sick. Jesus waited to go. Jesus arrived 4 days later and met Martha, who was disappointed in him. Then Jesus meets with Mary and empathizes with her and cries. Because Jesus was able to feel what they were feeling, he was able to show them what they needed in that time. And the whole time, Jesus' plan was for his name to be glorified and for their faith to be strengthened and to trust him at his word. So I can walk with Jesus because he is willing to feel what I feel. Now, feelings, you either love to talk about feelings or you hate them. Why? Because with feelings, they come joy, come sadness, anger, hurt, jealousy, frustration, fill in the blank. And I know each and every person walked into this room this morning feeling something. And the definition of feelings is a simple one, but it's a loaded one. Here it is. Feelings, which is a noun, something, are an emotional state or reaction. You're probably like, yeah, I already knew that, but let's just talk about it here for a second. And this definition shows that behind every feeling, there's a reason or circumstance for that feeling. Like, for instance, when you get a new job, and it's a job that you've been really working on, you get really excited, you're very relieved, you're going to go out for dinner that night and celebrate with all your friends. Or when you break up with somebody, or you lose a loved one, or something tragic happens that's unexpected, you're left feeling hurt, frustrated, resentful, angry. It's a cause and effect. Our circumstances cause a certain emotion, and it affects our character and who we are if we let it. Why we avoid or ignore our feelings at times is because of the circumstances that cause them. We are drowning so much in the feeling of emotion that we begin to act out of character. We might say or do things that we might not normally do, just like we saw in Martha as she interacted with Jesus. And we begin to not be able to see clearly or speak clearly or breathe. We get so overwhelmed and feelings are being piled upon feelings to the point where our will to even hide those feelings are gone. And all we're left to do is just weep. We become broken. And I know you're thinking like, man, your whole message up to this point has just been like, man, this isn't really fun to talk about. He doesn't have any funny stories or really making you laugh. But I wanted to get down to the point that each and every person in this room is feeling this way right now, has felt this way, or is about to go into a season of hurt, of feelings, of brokenness. But where I want to land the plane is as we learn to walk with Jesus, we can rest knowing that Jesus was in the same place, that Jesus has felt what we have felt. But why is that so important? Why is it so important when learning to walk with Jesus that he chose to feel what we feel? It's because he knows. He knows how it feels, and because he knows how it feels, he knows what we need. He knows how it feels, and because of that, he knows what we need in the moments of hurt, in the moments of struggle, fill in the blank, even in the moments of joy. He knows what we need. So why wouldn't we walk with someone who has gone before us? Why wouldn't we walk with somebody who knows what we are feeling, who has suffered for us, who has had rocks thrown at him, who has been spit on, who has been made fun of, who people think he's crazy, who has been tired, who has been angry, who's been hungry? He knows. He's been through all those things. In Hebrews 4:15, if you're a note taker, I would write this verse down. It's an amazing verse. It says that Christ understands our weaknesses, for he faced all of the same testings we do. Not some of them, all of them. And what separates him apart from every single person in this room and in this world is that he faced all the same testings that we do and experienced weakness, but he never chose to sin. So he has established such a great model for our lives to be able to say, I'm going to walk with this person who has experienced everything that I've experienced, but yet he didn't sin. So he is at a point that I want to be at. Because eventually when we get to a point when we're hurting and we make mistakes and we react in ways that we know that's not ourselves, we don't like that. We become aware of that and we become something that we don't want to be. But because Christ experienced how we feel, he knows what we need in those moments. So are we going to choose to walk with him? Or are we going to try to go walk on our own? But I also want to point to that Jesus not only feels in the same way through our weaknesses and through our hurt and through our pain, but through feeling joy. Joy, he experienced joy, he experienced excitement and laughter and loved seeing our emotions in that way. Our best days and our greatest joys are things that he delights in also. So when we are learning to walk with Jesus, we can trust him with our emotions. And that might be a hard thing to do at first. But we are able to let him know what we are feeling and rest knowing that he's been there before. But let me tell you with one thing, just like we saw in Martha. Even in the midst of our greatest pains, in our worst of days, Jesus wants us to respond in faith. He wants us to take a step. And in order to walk with Jesus, we need to start walking. We just need to take that step and walk with him. And along the way, sometimes Christ is going to ask us to do what only we are capable of doing so that he can do what we can't. So that his glory can be seen. So that the steps that we take when we walk with him can be strengthened, can be stronger, and we can become alive because after all, he is the resurrection and he is the life. So why not walk with something who makes us alive? We're no longer the walking dead. But we have to trust him to know that once we take that step, once we roll away that stone, he's going to perform a miracle in our lives. He is going to do something that we could never expect or imagine, that defies science and everything that we know, because he is God and we are human. So what stone do you need to roll away in your life in order for Christ to move? So that you can walk with Jesus. Because Jesus has invited us onto this journey to walk with him. And one of the reasons we can do that is because he is willing to feel what we feel. So as Jordan comes up, we're going to close with some time to just listen to a song. And as I was working on my message this week, this song just came up. Phil Wickham came out with another sing-along album. And this song just hits home with me, and is just so powerful, because I feel like it reminds us of the hope and joy that we have when faced with struggle, when faced with bad emotion and with good ones. And so I just encourage you that as they sing this song, I just want you guys to stay seated. You can read the words on the screen. It's going to be a new song. Probably most of you haven't heard this one before. But I just encourage you to just close your eyes, bow your heads, and just give all your feelings to God. And just let him know how you feel. Like, honestly, just let him know. Just talk with him. You know, are you angry right now? Are you hurting? Are you joyful? Are you stressed? Are you overwhelmed? Are you excited? Are you thankful? How are you feeling right now? And you can communicate with him and trust that he knows. And not just knows how you feel, but he knows what you need in the current emotional state that you are in. Because it's not a bad thing to feel. It's not a bad thing to express emotion. And I know a lot of times the way that we cope with them is to not talk about them and to hide them and to sweep them underneath the rug, because we got this. Because I can walk on my own and I can do these things. But God has walked before us so that he can walk with us. So just let him know how you feel and just listen. You don't have to try to explain yourself or try to come up with a solution by the time that you're done praying, but just listen to see what he might be telling you, whether it's through the words of this song, whether it's through something that I've said, whether it's through a conversation that you're going to have at lunch after church, or even tomorrow or throughout the rest of this week. Be ready to listen, because God knows what you need, and it might not be in the right timing. You might think that he's too late, but he is never too late. And he has a plan for your life. And this walk with Jesus will be the best walk that you'll ever have and be so worth it. Because there is nothing better than surrendering your life to Christ. And I know it's a vulnerable thing talking about feelings, but there is nothing more freeing than surrendering everything that you have to him. And I know some of you in this room haven't even taken that first step yet in walking with him. There's things that are holding you back. And I know that some of you in this room have taken that step, but you're kind of like are pulling away because you don't like where you're heading right now. You don't like where Jesus is taking you right now. And there's something going on in your life that has just blown everything up. But I want this to be a safe place for you to be able to let those things go, give them to God, and just worship him, communicate with him, talk with him. Because surrendering, like I said, surrendering yourself to God and everything that you feel and everything that you experience is the most freeing thing that you could ever experience once you do that. So let me pray, and then we're going to listen to this song. God, we come before you as broken people, God. We have ups and downs, God. We have joyous times. We have hard times. We have sad times, God. But you know what we need in those moments. Not because you're God, but because you actually sent your son to experience those same moments here on earth as a man, as a son of God. So I pray that would affirm in us who you are and how you care for us and how you love us, and that we would take that step. We would do something and roll that stone out of the way, preventing you from doing something great in our lives, God. Preventing you from doing something that we've never seen or thought or imagined before. So God, I just pray that during this time we would be able to surrender those things to you and walk out of here walking with you and trusting you, Lord. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.